Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, welcome in Tuesday edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I'm just doing it, man. I'm just throwing down the shorty gauntlet right now today because I basically have no choice.
Well, we did an entire show on non-arable material right before I hit the record button as well. So, you know, I feel like we've gotten our yayas out, so to speak, and we could just hit the ground running and bang through it.
I will say it was a pretty good show that you'll never hear.
Agreed.
Like I had fun doing it.
I'm glad.
All right, so should we just jump into the homework from last week? We got a little bit of a, you know, pop culture buffet of stuff.
Yeah,
I would say some vastly different viewing experiences.
Vastly different. I would say four things that, you know, in terms of three of them, two TV shows, or no, I guess three movies and one TV show, right? But a very cinematic TV show. These were about as different as four as different things as you could possibly have. So I actually want to start with Falcon and the Winter Soldier because I'm not going to say I regret that we have this in the homework, but I am worried that this was essentially pointless for us as a show.
I'm not going to say it's not pointless for us as a show, if that makes sense. But I don't have the animus that I had towards WandaVision.
Just
towards
because,
this, if that makes sense.
I imagine because there's sort of less pretense.
Yeah, like I feel like the conversation that we had about that show, where you're like, you know, it's a genre picture, you know, it's a genre show. Like that very much applies to this. And you're right. Like there is really no pretension. Like this just is what it is.
Yep.
You know, and my ability to enjoy what this is, I think, is still lower than most people. Like I just, you know, I get why, you know, a CGI scene of Falcon, you know, battling, you know, freeing hostages over midair or whatever is. Like, I get how that's really cool to people. Like,
right.
It's just not that cool to me. You know what I mean? So, yeah, like, if that's what you're here for, and that's then good on you. Like, it's fine as that. I think Anthony Mackie is a strong lead in this show. I mean, obviously,
yes.
He's on one of two leads. And I don't think we got all that much into the other guy in the first episode.
I really like Sebastian Stan, though. And I'm excited for, like, a... you know, they don't like each other that much sort of buddy cop vibe going on. And I think, you know, from a comic book perspective, and I'm not a big comic book guy per se, I'm more of a comic book movie guy, but like the idea of like a Captain America who's a government operative should make for a pretty interesting season, I would think. And clearly, like, this show, I would imagine, is going to establish who becomes Captain America moving forward.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, I guess it's not spoiling it to say that's your big hit cliffhanger, right, is who is Captain America guy.
Well, but I mean, I don't think that's going to be Captain America by the end of the show. I think it's probably going to be either Falcon or the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Well, but is it like Falcon is Falcon, right? He can't just
become
Captain
and
Bucky, America,
and Bucky is the Winter Soldier, but I don't know. Can you? I think that's what we're about to find out, or at least that's what I'm about to find out, because
I'm
not
just
going to watch this.
I'm going to say, you know, for some superficial reasons, that people would notice if, you know, the Falcon became Captain America, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would, yeah. It'd be a thing.
Yeah. It'd be a thing.
Right.
You know, like a Matt James and the Bachelor kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, that thing, I wasn't even thinking of that thing, but I mean, like, within the world, like, I'm not saying it's going to be a sneaky move. I'm saying, like, I think they are going to declare that either Bucky or, you know, Sam the Falcon is the new Captain America. Somebody has to be the new Captain America, and I doubt it's just the random guy they cast as the government operative.
Yeah. So this may surprise you, but I don't know that I'm out on Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Okay.
Yeah. Look, it's not going to be a priority for me. It'll be one of those shows that I would imagine that, like, I may binge after, you know, six or seven of them are out and I have nothing to watch.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's fine.
Right. Well, it's an action TV series, and it's got some of your favorite comic book characters if you're into that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a thumbs up for me. You know, a casual thumbs up, but a thumbs up nonetheless.
Yeah, and look, they clearly spent a lot of money on it. It looks good.
Oh, yeah.
So
the checkbook is open, for sure.
Yeah, it's not a tough watch, for sure. And that's kind of about all I have to say about it. You know what I mean?
That's why I wanted to do it
first.
Yeah,
sure. all right. Should we move to Operation Varsity Blues?
Yeah, because did you know what it was doing before we turned it on? Like, did you know the Matthew Modine situation?
I knew Matthew Modine was involved.
But didn't you think he'd be like the narrator?
I did not know that it was going to be like this sort of docudrama, I guess would be the way to format.
I don't know what to call it, but I think we can say what happened, which is just that they, in addition to interviewing people, experts and people involved with the scandal,
real people involved in the scandal.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one anyway. They also had Matthew Modine and other actors act out phone calls that they had transcripts of. So unless I misunderstood, the phone calls we witnessed in this documentary were in fact verbatim versions of the phone calls that this guy had.
My understanding too. And
right.
That to me, like, elevates this from like, you know, an A&E, you know, or ID, that, you know, those kind of like crime shows where they do the reenactments.
It's,
you know,
the
what I
difference
mean?
Like, between what they did with that trash Al Davis documentary and a good movie. Because and maybe this is because of the recent Al Davis experience, when that's the first second Matthew Modine was on screen having a conversation, I was like, wait a second, whoa. But I actually think in the end it was a really useful device, because they don't have audio recordings that they can play, and having like a dry expert just read it, I don't think would have had the same impact. Just obviously putting the words on screen would not have had the same impact. So I think this was a really interesting and successful choice that they made.
Yeah. Yeah. Also I think it was successful from a, like, utility standpoint, but also like just from an entertainment standpoint. Like, I think a lot of the dramatic scenes really popped.
Agreed.
Yeah. So
yeah,
and
Matthew Modine, I mean, it's a very, he had these like vocal tics and stuff that clearly, because I, you know, if you've ever seen a phone call transcript from a, you know, government document or even just like a professional transcript, all the ums and ahs and pauses are in there, right?
Yeah.
So he really had a job to interpret the sort of vocal style of a guy when all the sort of like tics are written out for you. And I thought he really nailed it.
Yeah. I thought the show also did a really good job of like finding people who were early in this guy's life.
Yep.
I think to sort of like, you know, sort of illustrate his character. And he does seem to be, he's an interesting dude. You know what I mean? You know, like the scene that they show of like the paparazzi guy, like, you know, sort of accosting him outside the pool.
Yeah.
I thought was really interesting. And I that's the other device, I think, that, like, using available news footage. Mm-hmm. I thought they did that to really good effect as well. How much did you loathe Olivia Jade?
I find the whole thing around her specifically to be deeply fascinating. Because I don't, if I'm honest, I don't loathe her at all. I have no thoughts or opinions on her. Truly, deeply, I am indifferent to Olivia Jade. I have no problem with her existing in the world and no interest in witnessing her existence in any way, right? But there are hundreds of thousands or perhaps even millions of people who do want to witness her existence. And that's a marketable skill that she should be allowed to sell. That being said, I don't know if it's pity exactly, but like, this isn't really her fault.
No, but I don't. Yeah, like, I mean.
So, like, to me.
It's her fault that she is a completely indifferent fucking student. But
sure, but.
Even that is not entirely her fault.
Because no, it's not.
Because set up with a reasonable path to not do school.
Exactly.
I mean?
And it's not a path. Like, we can judge all we want, but this is. She's not, like, sitting in the basement smoking weed. She's,
right.
She's running what amounts to a successful business. And she clearly under, like, it's like the same thing when people talk about Kim Kardashian. Like, I don't care about her or want to follow her, but she clearly struck a chord in a and has a place in culture that makes her, in my mind, totally deserving of all the trappings of fame and riches that she has accumulated. Now, look, she started from an advantageous position. You know, there's plenty of things to criticize about her. But fundamentally, she's a businesswoman and a successful one. And if Olivia Jade wanted to be a businesswoman in that model, it seems like she was well on her way to success. And to me, it's her mother and father, I guess, who why? I honestly don't understand their desire to buy her into USC other than just for their own particular bragging rights in social circles. And that, to me, is about the most despicable thing. Because clearly Olivia Jade is not interested in bragging about USC in her own social circles. She doesn't care. It's all her parents using her.
I don't know. There was that one scene with her and the sister in the car with the USC sweatshirts on or whatever. But
sure,
like,
once she's there. But like, I don't get the impression that she was demanding to go to college.
No. In fact, I get the opposite impression. I think she would have liked to not go to college.
Exactly. So, like, to me, that's parents not only being irresponsible and doing illegal things and, you know, setting a bad example for their child, but trying to use their child to make their own status look better. Like, it's despicable. And so none of my animus goes toward Olivia Jade, truly. It just doesn't. It's for these people. And honestly,
all I meant is that she just doesn't seem like a very nice person. I agree with everything you're saying about the rest of her. And I don't think any of this is her fault.
Does she seem mean? She seems vapid, perhaps.
She seems quite mean to me. And
really?
Vapid a little bit. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that I saw her be mean, but whatever. I just don't care.
You don't see her be mean. You never see her be mean.
You're just assuming she's an asshole.
She just seems mean.
That might be that. Look, that may be a safe assumption, but I truly don't care. Like, I couldn't be bothered to find out.
No, I agree. Like, none of that is her fault.
Asshole, that's probably on her parents too, given the what we've seen of their behavior. But to me, that if there's a place they don't necessarily go enough, and it's not that they don't suggest it or even say it, it's just I might have liked more on colleges because they tell you the Stanford development athletic director who half of an athletic director's job is fundraising. They tell you the guy says he knew. What's the dude's name? Pete?
Yeah, of course they do.
And they're lying about that now.
Right.
So, like, to me, what I would probably, I guess I should say, I would like to watch another documentary on higher education in America and what a crock of shit scam it is.
Yeah, well, and this movie is, in its own way, I think, a really convincing argument for affirmative action. in that it's driving a hammer through the concept of the level playing field or the meritocracy,
yeah,
you know, that some people think would exist if we just got rid of affirmative action. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think, you know, maybe the answer for affirmative action is to make it about financial circumstance.
Yeah, could be.
But that's a much bigger conversation. I would say the
Ivy League schools are all need blind admissions, and they are all committed to grants and scholarships to allow anyone who doesn't go to pay for it, and it hasn't really changed their situation because of the whole exclusivity thing, right? Like, that exists, and that, you know, they want lots of applicants and they want to reject lots of applicants because it raises the prestige.
Well, I'm not saying need blind. I'm saying
need forward.
Yeah. Because, yeah, the problem is, like, need blind looks then at a high school kid's resume that is largely the product of privilege, right?
Yeah. I
mean, the kid who has to work the after school job is not in six clubs and a national merit scholar and, you know, doing an extra summer Japanese course. And you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that.
I mean, I think certainly that you could argue the focus on extracurricular activities and SAT scores bias privilege. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, I think this movie makes those arguments.
That's right. There's a guy in this movie who specifically makes those arguments. And that's why I'm saying, like, they don't ignore it. But I would like to see more done. I'd like to see a takedown of higher education. I mean, I went to I think you did too, right? A small liberal arts school?
No, I went to an
Ivy. Oh, you went to what, Cornell?
Yeah.
Okay. Same difference. I don't know why. I think because you moved to Minnesota, I was thinking McAllister for some reason. You know, Pomona College, Cornell's more well known, but like, these are really prestigious schools and they cost a fortune. And you tell me if your experience was different, but were there great teachers at Pomona College? Yeah, absolutely. But did you have to be smarter or work harder than a kid at Michigan State once you were in? And are you guaranteed a better education? Absolutely not.
Yeah, the Cornell experience in specific is a little different. You know, because Cornell, and I think this is true of some of the other lower tier Ivies, right? Like, they sort of have this.
Lower tier Ivies.
They have this, like, we're chasing Harvard, Yale, Princeton thing. And the theory, right, like, that is, if we make the curriculum rigorous, right, that's a way that we can catch up.
Oh, but that's not it, actually, because, again, it's all based on exclusivity, right?
Right, right, totally. And Cornell's at a disadvantage because it's part public and part private, and it's much, much bigger than any other Ivy, right? So there's 12,000 undergrad, I think, at Cornell, 18,000 total.
And the weather doesn't help either.
Yeah, which, and, you know, the rest of them are like, well, mostly Ivy League schools' weather sucks generally, but.
But doesn't Cornell, I mean, it's Cornell and,
like,
Dartmouth are the leaders in sucking weather,
Dartmouth,
right?
Yeah, Dartmouth is terrible. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. But, you know, the rest are in Massachusetts and New York and New Jersey, you know what I mean? So it's not like, you know, or Connecticut.
Yeah, you go to Stanford.
There's no weather
if you really want.
Yeah, go to Stanford if you want the good weather and the academics.
Or Pomona College, I guess. Shout out.
Yeah,
don't,
or Pomona College.
Hate.
So anyway, so Cornell is actually really hard. There's a lot of weed out courses, and you know, it's pretty famous for students killing themselves, and it's a pretty stressful academic environment.
Well,
and
I guess
would
what I
say
should
more
say
than, more so than Michigan State. You know what I mean?
Well,
but,
no, hold on. I'm not saying it's not a more rigorous academic environment. I'm saying if you're really hungry for education, you can get just as good an education at Michigan State. That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All these, like, you know, especially these big schools, if you're talking about, you know, a big state school or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
They, you know, there's it's a huge diverse opportunity of, you know, a curriculum, and
well, and really
they're gonna have big professors, and like, yeah, like any, you could get a great education anywhere.
Well, here's
people are paying for the prestige thing on the degree when they, right, it's
exactly
not a piece of paper when you get out at the end of it,
it's
right?
networking.
That's the
and
thing.
And
yeah.
And that, and the thing about, I mean, really, in my experience, and I, you know, for what it's worth, not just going to a prestigious liberal arts college, I did test prep teaching and stuff like that after I graduated. So, like, I've been in this world, and in my experience, by far the greatest determining factor in how good an education a student gets is how badly that student wants to be educated, period.
Right.
And sure, there are places, especially when you get into, you know, inner city high schools, where there really are just not good teachers and it's a problem. But for the most part, at accredited colleges across the country, if you really want a great education, you can go and get it. It doesn't have to be an Ivy or a Stanford or one of those to get a great education, and you don't need those degrees to have success. In fact, it often sets you up for a sort of success that doesn't go great because you're not actually prepared for it.
Right. Not to mention the crushing student loan debt,
right,
that you are likely to come out of these days.
Right. So it's a broken system, much like a lot of things in this country. And this was an interesting look at one side of it, certainly.
Yes. And interesting. Emphasis on the interesting there. Like, it's pretty watchable. So, all right, should we talk about the prestige flicks we saw this week? I guess these two, I wouldn't say they were close together, but they were the closest together of the four things that we watched, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't want to group them as foreign films, but they at least have that in common. And both of them are relatively ponderous. Let's start with the most ponderous.
I don't know which one you're going with here, honestly.
I'm going with Minari.
Okay.
This movie was interesting in its own way. It was very much, I mean, here I guess is what I found the most interesting when this movie ended was this was very much a, you know, classic American Life pastiche sort of film, right? It's a, here's this family in somewhat difficult circumstances, and this is sort of what they go through in a year or two, I guess, probably, right?
Right.
But it's a very original immigrant version of that story that I thought was kind of interesting. Now, this isn't really my kind of movie overall. There's not much to it besides family emotions. But I do think it was well done and a story worth telling.
Yeah, I think it's a richly drawn family. It doesn't go into some of the places that you sort of expect it to go, right? You're thinking, you know, Korean family moves into Arkansas,
right?
And I. Pretty sure this was, I don't know if they ever really said, but I feel like this was like the 80s. Is that right?
Well, you know that the dude was a Korean War vet. So, yeah, I'd say 70s, 80s.
You know, yeah. And you can sort of see from the wrestling on TV, right? Like, uh-huh. There's some sort of, you know, period,
right,
where
they have a
VHS. Would be even less understanding of the diversity of things. Right. They do have a VHS. So that probably does put it in the 80s.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really, like, I was like, oh, God, they're just going to get
abused.
Yeah. like that's where you think it's going. And it's not really that.
No.
They don't, you know, the town doesn't quite know what to make of them.
But they're nice. They're nice enough about it. You know, they're a
yeah,
little
they
insensitive. But they but they basically try, and they're basically decent. And it's just hard because they're, you know, not that wealthy. They're in a tough spot. And because of the dream that Steven Yeun's character has. And, you know, again, it's a family drama, which is not my favorite type of movie, but I think it's a very, very good version of that.
Yeah, I would agree. It's very, very, very good version of that. You're right. Not a lot happens. You know, they're a couple of big plot points, but it's not really a, you know, hugely driven narrative story.
No, it's sort of a slow decline and then an end point, right? I mean, that's that's sort of what and not even not even that distinct of an end point, but a it's a family, it's a classic family drama in most ways.
Yeah. I have to say, like watching this, did you feel like, oh yeah, this is a real Oscar contending performance from Steven Yeun? Like, no. I don't have anything bad to say about it, but
in fact,
I'm surprised it's getting that kind of attention.
I don't want this to sound like just a blatant insult, but I was constantly distracted by my confusion as to why he's nominated for an Oscar. It was the thought I had most frequently throughout this film is like, what, why, what is he doing that's so special? And I think Steven, I'm with you. He's perfectly good, but he's just a guy and not that great of a guy and not that electric of a performance.
Yeah. He doesn't stand out from any of the other performances in the film to me.
No, in fact, if anyone was going to get nominated, I would almost think it would be a supporting nod for the Jesus guy.
Yeah, the guy from Remember the Titans.
Yes, he's very. That's a memorable performance, and it's not—it's not that explosive either. Like, it's relatively subtle. Maybe subtle is not the right word. It's relatively.
Yeah, I mean, the character does speak in tongues. You know what I mean? So
it's not so overdramatic, but it's a really interesting character and a really interesting performance. Whereas Steven Yeun, again, is like, does a good job of being the guy in the family drama, but he's just a guy. So I'm with you. That is one of the weirdest. But I, you know, who knows what the Oscars are doing, man? And I don't. Is there a snub that we're worried about? I don't know.
No, not really. It's obviously it's a weird year for that stuff, and I don't have any bitterness about it. And it's pretty clear that this was Steven Yeun's an executive producer on this, along with Brad Pitt, by the way.
Well, yeah, it's a Plan B production.
Yeah. So I'm sure that he did a lot of work to get it made, and he should be really proud of this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't go. Look out, Chadwick Boseman. You know what I mean?
No. No, or even Riz Ahmed. I mean, Riz Ahmed, I thought, was a much more interesting and
much more. Yeah, I thought the kids in this movie were pretty great, though.
The both little boy was tremendous. You're right, both of them. Yeah. Both of the kids were great, and the grandma I thought was really, really good. And honestly, and this is not a shot because it's a really well acted film. Steven Yeun is the least interesting performance in this movie.
Yeah. All right. Good. I'm glad we're in agreement. You're right.
No, I mean, we're not just in agreement. I'm with you. I was constantly thinking about that because knowing that he was nominated going in, I expected a bigger thing. I just expected more from that role.
Yeah. That said, really like the movie.
Good movie.
Yeah. It's sweet. And but not saccharine at all.
No, it's moving. it's a moving film. It really is.
Moving is a better word.
Yeah. Okay.
And a nice meditation on family. All right, so on to another route.
This I found to be far more interesting. To be honest, I would be less surprised if Mads Mikkelsen was nominated for Best Actor. This was a really interesting role for a guy who I've never seen play anything like this. He was really quiet a lot of the time and then had these sort of dynamic explosions with the drinking. Like, there's so much here. And I don't know if this movie's perfect either. It hits weird. It's very, like I said, it's very quiet in general. Like, a lot of the lines are sort of muttered.
Yeah.
Like if this was in English and there weren't subtitles, I might have needed to put the subtitles on. But boy, I was intrigued the whole time. And there was sort of a joyousness to the end of it that I don't know, man. This movie really got to me.
It's quite a journey.
Yeah. You know,
'cause there was a point where I was more like, why did Matt Mikkelsen take this role?
Uh-huh.
You know, because you know, the early version of this character who hasn't, you know, is kind of looking for something in himself.
Right.
Just isn't that dynamic or interesting. It didn't seem like he'd be all that interesting to play. And I was like, well, is this just, you know, maybe he really wanted to do a Danish film, or maybe mm-hmm. he really wanted to, you know, play against type. But then as the movie goes on, and you know, the drinking, the planned drinking sort of awakens something in him.
Yeah.
You know, you start to, and then that brings out some conflict. Mm-hmm. Then you really start to see some of that stuff. And
it's
then,
a real grower, this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, what the final scene is so, is really, really interesting, you know?
Yes.
And like, the movie builds to it in these sort of really in ways that you're not aware of as it's happening. You know what I mean?
100%. And you know what's interesting? I don't know the answer to this, but I definitely felt when this ended that there's probably a lot of social commentary about, you know, Denmark's drinking as a country involved in this film.
Yeah.
That like doesn't totally hit for us, but there's just a poignance to the whole thing. I mean, it sounds very silly, right? The whole concept sounds very silly, and it sounds like it could easily devolve into a very stupid movie. Like four teachers decide to drink heavily throughout the day to test out as a sociological experiment, basically.
Right, which is insanity. Right?
It's like, completely insane.
None of them are like, we're going to get fired.
Right.
You know? None of them, like there's just so many insane consequences to this idea if we're going to be drunk or semi-drunk during the day every day. You know
yes.
what I mean? At school while we're teaching children.
Right, and you see many of those consequences play out. But yeah, it's just a really interesting movie. And very unique, I thought, which is why even though it has some similarities with Minari, like it's really a very different experience. It sort of starts in the same quiet place that Minari lives for the whole film, and then it's a roller coaster ride, especially considering it's like a, you know, actionless indie flick. Like the emotions and the things that are awakened by and then sort of destroyed by the drinking, it's just, there's so much to this movie.
Yeah. And that's like, as you're sort of, you know, you're climbing the roller coaster, if you will, of them drinking a little bit every day and finding that it's like benefiting their lives. And it does sort of, you know, awaken them and make them more effective in all of these other, in these ways. And like, you're like, well, look, they're not going to make a movie about drinking that's just going to be like, drinking is awesome and we should all do it. Right. Like, you know, there's going to be consequences to this. So like that part, like that's like the part where you're at the top of the roller coaster and you're aware that there's going to be this, like, you know, what's coming on the other side of that hill, right? Like it's kind of in your thoughts the whole time. And
100%. Yeah.
That does happen.
Yep.
But to me, it was not in like, it didn't happen in the way that I expected at all, which I think was kind of a nice, you know, like I said, it's a journey. Like
it is.
It definitely goes to some really different places. And of course it's four guys. It affects them all differently, you know?
And it does, like, the consequences are significant, right? Like it does not soft sell how dire this could be, but yeah, it's four different experiences and, you know, it's a movie that is in many ways all about drinking and in other ways, not about drinking at all. It's one of those things it's a pretty brilliant, gigantic metaphor, this film. And again, I, you know, going back to what made me so interested in it as an idea in the first place, I just thought it was a fascinating performance from Mads Mikkelsen, who I've never seen outside of like an action movie, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it turned into a pretty good performance.
Yeah.
I have a random question.
Okay.
How big do you think the town was that they lived in this movie?
It's a great question. I'm going to say small, but not minuscule, like something in the 10,000 range.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It was really hard to tell. You know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of like when they did outdoor shots, I was kind of looking around for context. Right. You know what I mean? Like,
they all kind of bump into each other, right? So like, it can't be too big. But it doesn't feel like a village with a 1,000 people or something.
Right, and you know, that part of me was like, you know, there's a scene where they're all, you know, they have really turned it up, right? And they're like stumbling down the street after leaving a bar. And I was like, man, four teachers from the same high school, like clearly drunk off their ass in the middle of the street.
It was pretty
in a town
dead,
of that
though.
Size could be problematic. It was very late.
Yeah.
But it sort of just got me thinking about, you know, but you're right. Like it did seem like a friendly neighborhood thing, but also like larger than a village. And it was really hard for me to sort of peg. Yeah,
no,
you know,
no, that's a good question. I didn't think about it, but now I'm curious.
It was a very like this. It was a, you know, you need to be a person who's good with subtitles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you are, then it's an enjoyable experience.
I'm not going to lie. Like as a not a big subtitle guy, this wasn't the easiest week for me. And I'm not thrilled that we chose another subtitle option. But, you know, a lot of good content coming from other countries. So I got to get used to it.
What is our subtitle option this week?
Beartown.
Oh, Beartown has subtitles.
Let's do homework. Beartown is
it's on HBO Max.
Yeah, it is. Damn it, I already forgot what country.
Hockey.
It's a hockey thing. Sweden. It's a Swedish hockey show, but also a crime show. And I've heard really, really good things about it. I've heard that it is both an intriguing crime drama and also has some of the best hockey scenes you'll ever see. So fingers crossed on that.
And then everything else is in English.
Thank God. I'm not trying to be an ugly American, but for God's sakes, I can only read so much.
There's a lot of basketball going on.
I
need to read. Like it was the two subtitles was tough on the schedule because you can't do anything else while that's happening.
Ain't that
All right, Nate Bargatze, who's a comedian who I knew nothing about, but you are a fan of?
I mean, I'm not a diehard, but I've seen him a couple times as an opening comedian, and I think he's funny, so let's find out.
Okay, we're going to watch the special and find out. Tina Turner's got a documentary on HBO. It looks like it could be pretty good. I mean, Tina Turner's the fucking best. She's a legend. It's called Tina. I believe Saturday night is when that premieres. It's definitely this weekend on HBO.
Excellent.
And the last blockbuster, which is about the video store, getting some buzz on Netflix.
People are
watching it. You know what I mean?
Seems like people are watching it. So I kind of want to see what it's all about. And I don't know about you, but I do have fond video store memories. Like there was a place called West Coast Video that was two and a half, three blocks from the house that I grew up in. And like, that was a thing, you know, me and my sister or the whole family would walk over to the video store and like browse the stacks and rent a movie for like a Friday night. And, you know, Blockbuster exploded that to where you could get whatever movie you wanted. It's definitely like a moment in time in our lives, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, I think if you were a certain age, like, you know, there was a store that was the place to not only get movies, but video games. It was kind of like a version of the toy store. You know what I mean? Like there weren't that many stores in your neighborhood that were going to be that fun. Right.
Exactly. It was, beyond having stuff you wanted, it was like a fun journey when you went there.
Right. And like, I don't know about you, but we used to go just, you know, browse the racks, right?
You
could spend an hour in there just looking at movies to potentially watch.
And when we got into like, you know, middle school, early high school, I think it became a way for us to see random crap we might otherwise never have seen, you know, by just browsing stacks and being like, Munchies, what is this? You know?
Yeah.
Do you know what Munchies is?
The internet exploded that. I do not know what Munchies is, no.
Oh, man. Okay. So I strongly recommend anyone who is into really terrible films, like B-movies. The film Munchies is like a really awful, explosively bad Gremlins.
Okay, great.
There are these little evil creatures from space who wreak havoc, but it's like, you know, because it's a B film, and it's actually directed by the editor of Gremlins.
Of Gremlins, okay, great.
It is just these little havoc wreaking
from the editor of Gremlins,
but much dirtier. Little guys, you know, because it's a B movie, so it's very like edgy. It's so bad, and it looks awful. It is. You gotta watch it, and it stars Harvey Korman.
Okay, Munchies.
Yep.
I'll see if I can find that somewhere.
It's gonna be hard to find, but it's 83 minutes well spent.
All right. I don't think we did anything that's going to cost any money this week, too, so I'm excited about that.
Free week at the toy department. Woo!
That's right. So enjoy the homework, and we will be back on Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
To discuss the challenge. Getting
Bye.
Down to it.
Oh, I blew it. I blew the line.
Okay, say it again.
Bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.